We've been shining a spotlight all week on reproductive health. So far, we've reported from places like the Philippines and Malawi, looking at who makes decisions about birth control, sex, and pregnancy. Obviously, we have our own debates about these issues right here in the United States. And today, we're going to hear a story that's deeply affected the small immigrant community in South Bend, Indiana. But it could have implications for women across the state. Our reporter is Amy Gastelum, and I should warn you, this story includes some disturbing descriptions.
There's a lot that's confusing about the account I'm about to relate. It concerns a woman in her early 30s, Purvi Patel. Patel comes from a family of immigrants from India who settled in South Bend. In this mostly Irish Catholic town, they kept to themselves. Patel worked to support her family and also took care of her grandparents.
One has Alzheimer's and the other one has a neuropathy, and I believe it's wheelchair-bound and needs transfers. And her parents also live in her home with her grandparents and her. So she is a caregiver for all of them.
That's Sue Ellen Bronlin, a local advocate with the Indiana Religious Coalition for Reproductive Justice. Patel and her family are not talking to the media right now, but she's in touch with Bronlin, who can give her side of what happened on July 14th, 2013. That's the day Patel's pregnancy ended.
She went to work that day at about 10 and went home at 1 because she didn't feel well and spent the rest of the day in bed till about 7:30. She had to pee and went into the bathroom, and then it just all fell out is how she describes it, and was gushing blood on the floor.
Bronlin says Patel saw there was a fetus amidst the blood, but that the fetus was not alive. And as she continued to bleed, she knew she had to get to the hospital. She drove herself to St. Joseph's Hospital and arrived at 9:45. At first, Patel didn't tell anyone she'd been pregnant. The doctor who first assessed her wouldn't talk to me, but her colleague, Dr. Kelly McGuire, did. He got called in to help figure out what was going on with Purvi Patel.
She did indeed have an umbilical cord that looked like it was from a baby that was fairly far along.
He thought it looked big enough to have been attached to a full-term fetus, and since Patel didn't have a fetus with her, Dr. McGuire took action.
So I left the room and actually figured out where the patient lived and called the police department in that area and asked them to go out to her house.
Dr. McGuire, like all physicians, is what's called a mandated reporter of child abuse. If they suspect abuse, they have to notify police under the law.
I explained to them that she was at the hospital and that I thought that she had had a baby and that the baby wasn't with her.
Dr. McGuire then told Patel that police were headed to her house, and that's when she told him that she had actually disposed of the fetus in the dumpster of a shopping center. The doctor updated the police, and then he did something that no mandated reporter is required to do. He joined them.
Where we are, there's a lot of windows, and I could look out and actually see multiple police cars heading down towards the Target store. It was actually a very surreal moment. At that point, I decided that there was nothing really for me to do at the hospital, so that I would actually go over to the Target store myself, that maybe I could help in some way.
Dr. McGuire arrived still in his scrubs, and police were searching dumpsters and soon found the fetus wrapped in paper towels inside a plastic bag.
He was clearly dead. The officers basically had me declare that he was dead, and then they formally declared the area a crime scene.
Purvi Patel had gone from being a patient of Dr. McGuire's to a criminal suspect. In Indiana, there's a law against, quote, child neglect resulting in the death of a dependent. Back at the hospital, Patel had surgery to remove her placenta. When she woke up at 3 a.m., an officer was there to interrogate her.
He said, "So who's the father of this baby?" And she was really kind of, it seemed like she was embarrassed, like she didn't want to talk about it.
Emma Selm is also with the Indiana Religious Coalition for Reproductive Justice, and she watched a recording of the hospital interrogation that was later shown at Patel's trial.
He said, "Was it a one-night stand or something? Oh, and was he Indian, too?"
Patel went on trial in January this year. By then, she faced two charges. The child neglect charge meant that the fetus was born alive. Prosecutors tried to show that the fetus took a breath after birth. But Patel faced another charge that would seem to contradict the first. Feticide. That's a charge usually used against illegal abortion providers or people who harm pregnant women. It's on the books in lots of states, but only a few states have used this law against women themselves. Indiana is now one of those states. Even local right to life activists like Sean Sullivan say they were surprised by the double charge.
I think that's the right result. It's just a little bit confusing as to how you could sentence on both of them when the elements of each are somewhat contradictory.
On February 3rd, a jury convicted Patel on both counts. She faces up to 70 years in prison, and her sentencing is scheduled for March 30th. For The World, I'm Amy Gastelum, South Bend, Indiana.
A disturbing story that opens up a lot of questions. Reporter Amy Gastelum joins me now. So I have to ask you first, Amy, why did Purvi Patel leave this fetus in a dumpster? I know you couldn't talk to her, but what do we know about this?
Well, Marco, we know that that was a really big issue in this whole situation. Defense says that Ms. Patel was actually having an affair with a married man at her job, and she thought she was only 3 weeks pregnant when her pregnancy loss happened, and she actually was much further along. We know that she wanted to hide it from her very religious family, and she was going through a physically traumatic experience during that loss, and she was losing a lot of blood. So during situations like that, people don't always behave in ways that we think are quote-unquote normal.
Right. And the jury found her guilty of feticide. What's been the reaction there in South Bend to that?
The reaction has kind of been actually a little bit suppressed. I'm not sure everybody's aware of what it means to be charged with feticide because she's only the second woman in Indiana to be charged with feticide herself.
How new is the charge of feticide?
It's not that new. It was actually created in 1979 to prosecute illegal abortion providers, and then after that, through the years, became part of other things like murder and manslaughter and assault, other statutes like that, to punish people who harm a pregnant woman resulting in the loss of her pregnancy or the loss of her fetus. It really hasn't been used to prosecute women in regards to their own pregnancy outcomes until the last few years.
Now, you actually spoke with Inga Tenwe Montezeba. She's the president of the International Student Organization at Indiana University South Bend campus. Let's hear that.
What frustrates me is the fact that in Indiana, the only two women who have been charged with the crime are both internationals, or at least of foreign descent. And no one else has been, or at least to my knowledge, no American woman has been charged with the same crime. And I'm just seeing people who think that, hey, because she probably doesn't understand what's going on, because she's international, she must have committed a crime.
So, Amy, is there more at play here? Is it racism, or is this kind of part of a cultural divide in South Bend?
I think that's possible. There's a very small immigrant community in South Bend. It's also a very, very, very Catholic community, with Notre Dame University being the largest employer in that community. And we know from the interrogation that happened while she was in the hospital that the officer was asking her things like, well, is the father of the baby Indian and was your friend Indian? And really seemed to focus on that.
Mm. Is it significant that Dr. McGuire took that extra step to meet the cops at the Target store dumpster? I mean, what does that suggest?
He wasn't wrong in calling the police. He's a mandated reporter of child abuse as a healthcare provider. So that was totally within reason. Him leaving the hospital and going to search for the fetus himself is pretty unusual.
As far as the case overall, what about the argument that the state really is just trying to make women think twice about not taking childbirth seriously?
Women have responsibility about what's going on with them reproductively, but there's a problem with that. You know, punitive laws do drive women away from getting prenatal care. And I talked with David Orentlicker. He's a physician, lawyer, and former state lawmaker in Indiana, and he makes this point.
When you have these kinds of prosecutions, whether or not there's a conviction, what it says to other pregnant women is, if you do anything that might harm your fetus, you could be hauled into court. And that is worrisome for a number of reasons, and one of which is pregnant women may not go see a doctor. If you discourage pregnant women from getting prenatal care, you're not helping fetuses, you're harming fetuses.
So, Amy, you're not only a radio reporter and podcaster, you're also a registered nurse, and you're from Indiana. I'm just curious, what strikes you about this whole story in your home state?
There's a lot of things that are really interesting about the story and a little bit disturbing. And one of the things is that, you know, the night that Ms. Patel lost her pregnancy, a detective came to the hospital and the nurse led him directly to Ms. Patel's room. And that kind of leading a detective directly to a patient who's post-op, that's just, it strikes me as unusual and a little bit disturbing.
Even if there has been a suspected crime committed.
You have to remember that Ms. Patel was recovering from a procedure, had lost a lot of blood. She was recovering from anesthesia. I don't know if that's an appropriate time to take comment from her, and especially to videotape her, and especially for that videotape to be shown then later at a trial. Your role as someone's nurse is to provide care for them, and that's your first role. I mean, the hospital that I served, we had a prison population and the inmates. So I took care of women all the time who were there pregnant, who had done something wrong, and that wasn't my problem at all. My problem was to make sure that they were healthy and to take care of them.
Reporter Amy Gastelum, thank you very much.
Thanks, Marco.